This is the Cubs-related podcast presented by Cubs Insider. I'm Brendan. With me is Corey. Tonight is May 10th. The Cubs just fell to the Rockies in their final game. They lost 2-3 in Colorado. Tomorrow they have an off day before they go to St. Louis to face the first-place Cardinals.
Boo!
Yeah, 2.5 games back. Needless to say, the Cubs are not playing up to basically everyone's expectations so far. We'll get into it. We'll talk about that and Eddie Butler and Candelario and some other things. But Corey, anything that you have for us to start us off?
Well, I think to start here, you and I will be, because I know he listens to the show, we're going to eat a little crow here and throw a formal apology to our dear friend, John Lackey, who I think I especially have spent the last several episodes saying that I still don't care to watch him pitch. That being said, we would be remiss if we did not acknowledge the veteran performance he put on the other day in Colorado.
I'm shocked he got through that.
And, you know, really, anything else aside, that was a very important outing for this team, and that's the type of thing you are looking for someone like John Lackey to do. The team needed somebody to just eat some innings, and not only did he eat 7 innings in that game, strikes out 10, gives up no runs, delivers what's basically the best start from a starter in weeks, if not the whole year,
probably. I can't even remember.
So, you know, yeah, a tip of the hat to John Lackey. I'm more than happy to tell you I don't really like watching him pitch. I'm also more than happy to sit here and tell you that he pitched a hell of a game and the team needed it. So, thank you to John for that. And, another note to, Dylan Floro the other day for, you know, dealing with all that travel, getting to come up and pitch with the MLB team.
Four and a third of an inning.
Yeah, giving the Cubs exactly what they needed. Some long innings. And, you know, for I don't want to say he kept the Cubs in the game, but, you know, in Colorado, he did, I think he only allowed, what, one run? Yeah. And so, you know, in theory, if the Cubs were attempting to mount any sort of comeback after Arrieta was taken out, he did allow them to do that. So, Two gutsy efforts from those guys that I think, you know, while we didn't get the result we wanted today, I think will prove important, hopefully this weekend and potentially in the long run.
You know, they did lose 2 of 3 in that series, but with the rain delay and the doubleheader, especially with Lackey's great start and even today with Hendricks' somewhat deep start, he got out in the 7th, but for the most part, the Cubs' bullpen is on a significant amount of rest, and the off day tomorrow will help. And a lot of the Cubs starters, because the games were so lopsided, got to rest a little bit more as well. So all in all, the blowout, Arrieta did pitch bad, but it does have benefits, I think. Because whether or not you're buying into this notion that the Cubs are fatigued and tired with all these abnormal start times, given that they're on national TV a lot and the rain delays and whatever, It does help. They're going on probably more or less like 4 days for some of these guys of decent rest. So I'm interested to see how that translates to Friday. But before we go on to today's game, Arrieta, the guy has caused me anxiety for the past year, dating back to even last May. I don't know what to make of him, Corey.
I think that we could submit these podcasts to like a therapist or a psychologist.
Please do.
To analyze.
I need all the help I can get.
Yeah, I think you could write a dissertation on the effect, the mental health effect of sports on young men in this country.
Yeah, but no, but in all seriousness, it's the inconsistency game to game. I don't know what to expect. Like. It was only, what, a week ago when I was on here praising Arrieta, even though the velocity is down. But I think the start in Colorado is a good example of why. I am scared of a velocity drop, because if his command is off, he's just going to get destroyed. And that's exactly what we saw.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, like some of these other guys, I'm not specifically that concerned about his current value. I don't think we're going to get 2015 Arrieta. We've all probably been moved on from that idea for the better part of a year now, because we didn't really get that last year.
I just want even last year's Arrieta. Like, I'm concerned we won't even get that.
It's been a little all over the place, but, you know, look, I've had this conversation again with some people, and it's not really an indictment of him as a pitcher or his value to this current team. I think for the most part of this year, I've liked more than I've disliked of what I've seen from him. And I think that throughout the rest of the year, he'll be a valuable, good pitcher. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff where you and I have both said this before, and we've been saying it, I think, even pre-2016. This is why we did not want to sign him to some gigantic deal that him and his agent decided that they wanted. And again, I don't say that as an indictment of his value to this team or his standing as a pitcher in Major League Baseball. I only say it as an indictment of whether or not I think he's worth the Phil Rogers contract, which I believe was 7 years, $200 million. And this start in Colorado and some of the other ones we've seen this year, that's exactly when I look at that and I laugh. I mean, I laugh out loud. So I'm like, this is what, you know, a contract like that should be reserved for almost sure things. And for the better part of, you know, almost like, what, a year and a half now, that Arrieta has been the furthest thing from a sure thing. And again, I want to clarify, that doesn't mean he's been bad. Even last year, he was inconsistent, but still very good and still, you know, up in the top of the league as far as pitchers are concerned. That's not the point. The point is that a long contract like that that people have talked about, and some people sort of insisted that the Cubs should have given him, you know, this is why. It's on a given night when he pitches next, which I think is in no is it'll be after St. Louis or right or in St. Louis
he pitched the first game of that doubleheader, right?
So I guess he would pitch Sunday then.
Yeah, he'd be on. Okay. Did they play Sunday night baseball? I hope not. I didn't even check.
I don't think so. I feel like I just read somewhere that they're not in prime time. I don't know. Hopefully not. I mean,
checking right now.
We just went through that. We're not going to do that again, but please.
Yeah, it's a morning game for Sunday. But yeah.
You know, if I asked you, you or anybody listening, what's he going to do on Sunday? If you look me in the eye and think you can give me an honest answer, that you, I call you a liar, you know? And I think that's kind of the crux of the issue, is that he's got great stuff. He's in great shape. I like his attitude as a pitcher. I think he's a great pitcher. But if I'm doling out a contract like that, I need to know what I'm getting on a daily basis. And I don't think you can say that with him. As far as how it shakes out the rest of the year, I'm really not sure. I think, you know, that Colorado start a little, I don't want to, because he was getting hit really hard, just generally wasn't good in that game. But, you know, a little bit of a weird game, obviously a lot of runs score on that ball that deflects off Schwarber's glove or whatever. Early in that game,
that was a weird start. You know, he pitched bad,
but I don't think what happens nine when runs bad.
Right. Like, definitely not nine runs bad, but I mean, that's what happens when you give up contact.
He wasn't missing bats, getting hit hard, and so I think he'll be all right. I think, you know, that was just one to write off, but. It's a curious situation. I will say that I was it's funny. I feel like the level of concern for these guys like literally changes on a dime.
Right.
Because even though Hendricks, you know, the velo was still mostly down today, I thought this start was as close to, you know, 2016 Hendricks that we've gotten all year. I direct you to, I think it was his first at bat. I know I sent you a gif of this, Brendan, but his first time facing Carlos Gonzalez, in this game was sort of like textbook Kyle Hendricks, with the way he was changing the eye level, changing speeds. And I think the last three pitches in that at bat are two elevated fastballs. I think one that Cargo fouls off, one that he swings through, and then a picture perfect low and away, just outside of the zone, fading down into the dirt, changeup that gets Gonzalez. He looks totally lost. And it was just one of those moments where you're like, all right, that's like vintage Kyle Hendricks right there. So I know. So just to say that, you know, it feels like the last episode we were talking, we were concerned about one guy. Now we're concerned about this guy.
Yeah.
So it's a little all over the place. But
I'm still. Yeah. Look, Hendricks pitched great. I know. I have to.
We know.
That guy,
everybody
right?
knows where this is going. But, yeah.
But I am still concerned with Hendricks. I just, until I see that 87-88, it's hard for me to envision him lasting for five more months with that type of stuff. It's just very difficult for me to imagine him getting through a Nationals lineup throwing 85 miles per hour to Bryce Harper and Daniel Murphy. That just doesn't vibe with me. That being said, and we'll see how the data turns out once it gets filtered through Brooks Baseball, but there was a change in, we were talking about this earlier, Corey, and it stuck out to me. I think it was in the sixth inning, he threw three straight cutters, and I checked the post-game pitch repertoire, and he threw nine total cutters, at least according to the pre-filtered, uncorrected data. If that holds up, that is the first cutter he has thrown since 2014. That's very significant. So I don't know what you want to make of that, if that's some type of compensatory mechanism for lower velocity or something that the Cubs nerds picked up that suggested room for improvement by throwing his cutter. I don't know what it is, but that's stuck out to me. And again, we'll see if it actually holds up. It could have just been four seamers that TrackMan was classifying as cutters, and that would be changed. But interesting. I think like there was that one pitch, Corey. Remember we were talking? It was like 88 miles an hour. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
that was a cutter. Like I don't even think he was throwing 88 mile per hour cutters in 2014. So that would be interesting. That being said, even though he's thrown 85, the last few starts have been pretty good from a run prevention standpoint.
Yeah, I mean the results are there. So
whether or not you think those will continue is up to you. Me, I don't think it will continue, but that's just, you know, me being me. But then we have Eddie Butler on Friday, and I'm pretty excited about Eddie Butler. I wrote a piece on Cubs Insider, if you haven't seen it, that was published today, or if you're listening to this on May 11th, published yesterday. And the one interesting trend I found was a more consistent release point amongst his pitches. So his release point between his changeup and his fastball, at least in spring training, was more consistent or more similar, so in the same location, than his release points in previous years with Colorado. And his release point between his changeup and fastball in Colorado was one of the most broad in Major League Baseball. So my thinking was, okay, if he has this obvious difference in release points, that hitters are able to pick it up very quickly and hit his changeup, even though it's a pretty filthy pitch. So I'm really curious to see if he actually does carry that trend over from this spring training into Friday's start. Because if he does, Corey, I think he actually has a chance to stick with the team, I'll be honest with you. I think we may have seen the last of Brent Anderson in the starting rotation, which I don't know about you, but I'm very happy about.
Yeah, I think when we last spoke, you know, I think both kind of were hoping that really, regardless of our interest in seeing Montgomery get some starts, that Butler would get this shot first. And, you know, again, the peripherals weren't, I don't know that they matched the ERA that he was posting down in Iowa, but, you know, look, at this point, The Cubs are looking for a fifth starter, somebody that can spare the bullpen from having to pitch eight innings a game or whatever Brett Anderson was averaging the last few outings. And I think that Butler is an interesting choice or an interesting potential option for that. I definitely agree with you that, you know, he's just one of those guys who has a lot of talent, you know, a former, you know, highly touted prospect. And, you know, if things can go his way, you know, he definitely has the background and the potential to, you know, turn into something useful.
So let me ask you a trivia question. Let's see if you can get this.
I feel like I always get these wrong, but
you usually do, but that's not surprising. Anyway, what do Albert Almora and Eddie Butler have in common?
Oh, this one's easy. They're both on the Cubs.
Oh my God. Come on, think more than that.
Were they in the same draft?
They were in the same draft, the 2012 draft. But that's not the answer I'm looking for. Try it. Be more specific.
Well, I'm two for two right now. So
you're narrowing it down. I don't even consider those correct answers, but you get one more chance.
Were they drafted one after the other or something like that?
Close. So Almora was drafted. That was Theo and Jed and Jason's first Cubs draft. They drafted Almora 6th overall. Eddie Butler was 15th overall in that draft. So we're talking about a relatively I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but you know, five years ago, this guy was drafted in the first round.
Right.
I mean, it's not as if all this stuff magically disappeared in 5 years.
Yeah, but, I think that's kind of what I was trying to get at.
For sure.
I think that's sort of a maybe more obvious, you know, better way of putting it, where it's like, you know, this guy was a first round talent, and you know, I don't think anybody's expecting him to, you know, go out there and win the Cy Young this year. But, you know, we've seen it before. You get the guy with Bosio, you get him in a winning environment like this, and, you know, you see what happens. But the stuff is definitely there for him to, you know, be a good piece for this team. And I think that it would put a lot of people at ease for the Cubs to have someone in that fifth spot who, you know, they can just count on for something. Again, similar to what I was saying about Arrieta before, you know, you're expecting a lot less from that fifth spot. But, you know, at the very least, it's nice to just have a general sense of what you might be getting on a given night. So, I mean, the rotation, I think, is the biggest point of concern. You know, I think the bullpen still I have really no issue with. I think has looked really good. I mean, even Brian Dunsing has been pretty good for his
staff. Stop.
He has. Stop. I mean, those are facts, Brendan. You're fake news right now. Okay. So, you know, so I don't really consider much there. I wouldn't really worry about the bullpen, or at least right now. And, you know, getting to the team as a whole, Would love your thoughts on that. I'll throw mine out here real quick.
Sure.
You know, I think that Colorado as a talented group there. You know, and as I was saying to you before, you know, look, that first game is a laugher. They played a really good game with the Lackey start. You know, and that was just a much more enjoyable affair, I think, for all of us. And today, you know, I see this on, you know, in the comments section of, you know, the Cubs Twitter and stuff like that, and just throughout my timeline and stuff like that. But just because today's starter for the Rockies, Marquez, is not someone you've heard of or has bad numbers on the year or anything like that, that does not mean that the Cubs have to beat him or even that they should beat him. We all watched the game today. He was throwing well. That's just, I think, an objective fact.
He was throwing darts, 97-mile-per-hour darts.
He was locating. He was throwing hard. He was changing speeds effectively. He was spinning a really nice breaking ball that I listened to both Pat and Ron and Len and JD. They both made mention of how good his breaking ball looked. He was locating it in the zone, out of the zone, up, down, all over the place. Like, sometimes these are all major league pitchers. These are guys who at one point, just like Eddie Butler, were very highly touted for real skills that they possess. And so none of this is to excuse the general way that the Cubs are playing, but sometimes guys just pitch well. It doesn't matter if they're a no-name loser. It doesn't matter if it's 80-year-old Bronson Arroyo. I mean, look, the Colorado Rockies, with the talent that they have, just got they got shut out for 7 innings with 10 strikeouts by John Lackey, everybody. The Rockies don't go into the dugout and say, oh, man, you know, we're a bunch of losers. Like, how could we? They go into the dugout and say, hey, John Lackey was throwing well tonight.
Yeah.
It happens. Like, that's how baseball works. So for all the criticisms and concern we're going to throw at the Cubs, I don't think failing to hit Marquez today is really one of them. He pitched a good game. Like, objectively, from the stands, he threw well and pitched a good game. That's it. So as far as any other thoughts on the state of the team right now, I am still kind of in that spot where I just can't really muster up the energy to be that worried about it. I think that, you know, pretty much I thought it would play out different. Obviously, if you've been listening to us, I think Brendan and I both thought that they would come out of the gate storming and just kind of coast again. That's right. Not what happened. I'm more than – I mean, I couldn't deny that. But, you know, I think that some of the stuff that we've been hearing this week, I think, kind of puts it all – it all makes sense. It kind of puts it all in perspective, and I think you just kind of have to let it all play out. I think Miguel Montero's comments where he thought that perhaps the team was taking some stuff for granted – Joe Maddon alluding today that the team, you know, perhaps wasn't sleeping enough and getting enough rest, and just this the way that this season has started and how often they played deep into the playoffs the last 2 years is, you know, just something that they're having to work through. And I don't think that any of those comments are negative. I don't think that any of them are excuses. I think that it's just giving us some insight on what's going on in these first, 34 games? What are they, 17 and 17?
Yeah, 34.
So, you know, and to Montero's comment specifically, I don't think people did, but I didn't take those poorly at all. And I didn't take that as him calling anybody out either. I took that more as him just saying, look, you know, we just won the World Series, and you kind of get the sense that maybe we showed up and just thought it would go well again. And, you know, like we did all year last year, and like we all came here prepared to do, we got to hunker down, we got to execute better, and we just got to be better. And I think that that's fine. It's 34 games. You know, we got over our, 120-something left. And, you know, they know they have to be better. They know they have to execute plays better. You know, like run scores in today's game, Javi makes an error trying to turn a double play, ends up getting no outs. You know, that's stuff they got to clean up. Mm. Wilson throwing the ball all over the place, it's got to get cleaned up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got Hayward out right now, Russell sitting today with a sore shoulder. Rizzo's not hitting, and, you know, I think for all intents and purposes, he's fine from the Chapman pitch the other night, but, you know, you just never know. Joe didn't use him today, so perhaps trying to get him some rest.
I'm not worried, Corey.
Yeah, I'll turn it to you.
Yeah, the offense I'm fine with. Like, I have no concerns about the offense. The Addison-Russell shoulder injury was interesting today. It maybe provides more context because he's been struggling.
I mean, I'm almost glad to hear it. I hope it doesn't continue or something
that
lingers. I'm glad to
hear that.
Well, you know what I mean, but it just is something. I'm not sure if the word is intriguing or something. Just to know that the way he's been playing lately, maybe some of the bad throws, maybe there's some explanation as to why that's been happening.
You know, those throws from, and I would never openly bash Addison Russell, so please don't interpret this as me doing so.
This is a new segment.
But it does look like some of his throws compared to last year have a little bit less oomph on it. We saw the previous series when he went home against the Yankees, I believe, when the infield was in. It just had nothing on it. He threw it far to the right side of home plate, and we've seen a few throwing errors recently where he just can't get it to Rizzo. So I don't know if that's playing into some of the defensive miscues. Then as far as his hitting goes, he started the year off great. Contact great, discipline great, power. I mean, that walk-off homer, he just absolutely demolished. And it looks like that those traits, just within the last 10 games or so, haven't been there. So if the shoulder is indeed contributing to these struggles, then yeah, like it does explain it. But I hope it doesn't continue. It sounds because like he was a late scratch today that it's not too serious, maybe just a nagging injury.
Sure.
So that's something to monitor. But from an offensive point of view, look, I'm not worried about Schwarber. The peripherals look okay. Yes, he's struggling, but he should be fine. You know Rizzo. He does this. The power. The thing with Rizzo, I just want to point out, the power is there, the discipline's there. That's all you need to know. That if you have those two traits, you can fill in the rest. And the contact is there as well. Everything will be fine with Rizzo. Bryant is just doing his thing. He's absolutely okay. Baez looks great. I mean, he's been one of the better Cubs hitters recently. The one hitter that I have a little bit of hesitancy with is Contreras, but even within last week, despite some of the bad at-bats in the 1-for-8 game in that 18-inning contest, he's been pretty good. The at-bats have looked better. So, to sum up, offense, not concerned. Pitching, we'll see. Hendricks,
we'll see. Come on.
No, I'm serious.
You're like at red. No, I know. But I'm saying, like you said, not concerned for the offense. I feel like you're at red alert over there for the pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to be calm here. If Arrieta can come back next start, pitch well. If Hendricks, look, if he continues to throw 85, 86 and gets results, then maybe I'll have to readjust my opinion. But I do have legit concerns about the pitching. We'll see if these continue. It's still early enough to put up a stop sign with my concerns, with my red alerts. If this continues through July, then yeah, maybe I'll actually throw up the panic sign. We'll see.
And just to those ends too, you know, it's one of those things where Schwarber has been a lot better. I think over the last like 10 games,
and he's hitting for power too. Like that's the thing. Like if a hitter is struggling, I think Hayward's a great example. From last year, we knew the power was not there whatsoever. If the power is not there and the at-bats look bad, you should be concerned. However, if the power is there and the at-bats look good, go have a drink. Like, just calm down. It will be okay.
And, you know, to a similar end, and I know you touched on it too with Rizzo, but he's key. And I know people don't want to pin this stretch on him, but I think he's hitting like 230 or something like that on the year right now.
Worse.
It might even be even worse than that.
Yeah.
And it's not the whole thing doesn't fall on Rizzo, right? He's been like this for, you know, a large portion of his career, where there's just stretches where he's just a little off and then he comes out of it and, you know, goes gangbusters for a little while. But, you know, the offense will struggle when Anthony Rizzo struggles. I used to know of a phrase. I saw it in maybe like an archive or something like that. You go, we go. I don't know if anybody... I don't know if anybody remembers that, and I definitely do not remember the player it was associated with. But, you know, you could apply it in some ways to Anthony Rizzo. And when Anthony Rizzo is hitting in the lower 200s, the offense might not be that good unless somebody else is going on some absurd, you know, crazy run.
And then you combine that with Schwarber's struggles, and you have two.
And Russell's.
First, yeah. You have three of the top five hitters who are just not getting on base.
Right? And if you believe, or if it comes to pass, I knocked on wood for anybody, that Rizzo is going to hit like this the whole year, then, yeah, the Cubs probably might struggle a good bit. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm pretty sure it's not. So, you know, you just got to ride it out. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll finish up my thoughts there. But concerned about Rizzo, not concerned about the pitching. Not to bring up the pitching. Like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like, if that's gonna, like, if you're gonna go out and openly bash this team and be concerned about the hitting, then if diving deeper into the numbers, there's no reason to be concerned about the long run for the hitting. I just cannot emphasize that enough. Again, the only player maybe that might have trouble long term if this continues is Contreras. But if we circle back around, if you were listening to our podcast about 10 days ago, the world was ending for Javi Baez. Ending. People were suggesting, the crazy takes were suggesting, bring up Hap, bring up Candelario, maybe even send Baez down.
Right.
Ten days pass. Baez is the best Cubs hitter on the team right now. For the past, what, 5 games? He has, what, 3 homers? He's stealing
bases. When Javi's hitting the ball to the opposite field like that,
a lot of his hits have been to the opposite field.
It's a good sign, and you should, you know, again, he's never going to be a big contact guy hitting 300 or something like that. But when you're seeing him hit homers and even just going to right field in general on a line, he's going to put up some good numbers. He's going to be a valuable player. I wouldn't worry about it. So. Yeah.
And the bullpen looks great. The bullpen was struggling, and I'd probably be a little bit more concerned too. But get me good pitching. This team will get it together. Maybe they need a few more nights rest. Maybe this off day tomorrow and off day on Monday will do them well. But
I did want to. I agree. Look, it's a bit of a test for all of us. You know, we're all certainly spoiled with how they played last year, and certainly this is not easy. Like, trust me, I think at this point most of you know that, and I'm sure it's the same for a lot of you. Like, we plan most of our day around these 3-4 hour games. Like, so it does not do me any pleasure or joy to sit and watch this team screw around as much as they've been screwing around, right? Yeah. And I'm not here to make excuses for them. I don't work for them. Nothing owed to me in that regard. So I'll tell you if I feel concerned, legitimately concerned or whatever, but it just feels like 30 games of whatever baseball, and the team is better than this. They know it. And I think they'll clean it up. I think they'll execute a little bit better.
Something interesting too. Two interesting things, actually. The Dodgers have won 10 of their last 13 games, and they had a poor start to the year. All of a sudden, Maeda is pitching like the same guy from last year. I mean, for whatever reason. And teams who have won a lot of games in the entire regular season have gone on these stretches. I think it was like, I forgot who it was on Twitter, but the 75 Reds, the big red machine, they started the year off 20-20, and then they won 103 games.
Yeah, so actually, I actually have some stuff open to that end.
Yeah.
It's funny that you should say that. This is one of those discussed elements where we're actually in sync, which is pretty rare these days. But just a couple of examples. The first example that I will throw out to you is a team that ends up winning 97 games and going to the playoffs. Stop me if this sounds at all familiar.
Oh,
and
2015.
On Sunday, don't spoil it, Brendan. On Sunday, July 6th, this team is swept by the last place
Phillies.
Philadelphia Phillies.
Cole
Hamels. That's not that game. That's the game before. The game before, they are no hit by Cole Hamels. And following that game on Sunday, they are 51-46 and 11.5 games out of first place in division. As Brendan has already spoiled for all of you, that team is the 2015 Chicago Cubs. And that was the end of July. And I have mentioned on here many times before about that Chris Bryant walk-off against the Rockies, which is the following night on Monday, July 27th. But I can put myself in that emotion right now. I can feel it. I remember the mental space. I remember how I felt when Jason Mott blew that lead on that Monday.
Oh, my God.
And then eventually they come back. But this is in July, folks, and that team still goes on to win 97 games. We're in early May right now.
Also,
so and again, now listen, I just to clarify, you could cherry pick any of these, right? I could go find teams that started 15-0 and only win 70 games. You could find so yes, I realize that, but I'm just so one more example for you, Brendan.
Yeah,
I am looking here at a team. Let me see how many games they end up winning.
Also, before you say this,
sure, go ahead.
I'm gonna forget, but I think it's hilarious that Jason Mott was closing games in 2015. I just want to point it out, but continue.
Very unnerving.
Yeah.
So I am looking at a team here who goes on to win 91 games, goes to the playoffs, wins a series in the playoffs, and eventually loses to the World Series champions. And I am looking here on June 16th of this particular season. That team is 35-33, 6.5 games out of a division that they will eventually win. Brendan, do you want to guess on this one?
It wasn't 2003, was it? Didn't they win?
No, this is not the Chicago Cubs.
Okay. So they won 91 games
This decade,
and they lost to the world champions.
In the playoffs, not in the playoffs. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, this is pretty broad here. Can you give me a league? Which league is it?
The National League.
The National League, they won a series. Was it the Arizona Diamondbacks?
No, it was the 2016 Los Angeles Dodgers.
Ooh, wow.
35-33. On June 16th, after a loss to the lowly Milwaukee Brewers. So, again,
really that bad at that point?
Yeah, man. It was – they were – last year was the Giants' year, and then the bullpen lost whatever it was, you know, 15 games or something crazy for them in that second half.
I didn't realize they were that bad that late.
Yeah, I mean, they were – I'm looking here at Baseball Reference. It looks like the high watermark here was on Sunday, June 26th. They were 8 games behind the Giants at 41-36 at the end of July. So, again, you can find – any examples of these to fit whatever narrative you're spinning. I'm well aware of that. But just in the last couple of years, both of these teams we know very well at this point. One of them was us. Just examples of sometimes it takes a minute to get things cooking, but the baseball season is long enough that it allows for that. And
yeah.
I think that we all know and hope that it's going to get better. And I think we trust in this team and just the general level of talent that they have to turn things around and be better. So, I just think overall, I still can't really get myself to a place where I'm overly concerned about this. But that's to be said, very frustrated. And going back to what I was just saying before, again, like I watch all these games along with every one of you. And it does me absolutely no pleasure to sit there for 3 hours a day and watch them screw around or have bad at-bats or make errors. It drives me crazy. But, they just won a World Series and they're not playing well, straight up. But I think we know that they're better than this. I think they know they're better than this. And I think they'll turn it around. It would be really lovely
to do it against the Cardinals.
For them to start
watch them
Friday,
go and sweep the Cardinals, right?
Yeah. So, but even if they don't, stick with them. This is a group that is not going to be satisfied winning one title. And if they have to move things around or take some drastic action at some point, then I think they'll do it. But for now, just, however you get through these games, be it a stress ball, punching a hole in your wall. Typically for me, it's pacing.
Have you paced yet this year?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, though there's a lot of expletive-laden rants that go on in this house. But, I guess I'm just taking it in stride better than I have. And I don't know, I guess I'd be curious how it's been for most people. I know my timeline is filled with a good mix. I think people who normally are kind of a sit back and relax type people getting a little frustrated here. Other people kind of taking it in stride. So however you want to do it, do it. But, try to avoid the, hey, let's send Addison Russell to AAA type stuff, because I don't think that's going to help anybody. And actually, I do want to at least bring it up. The Ian Happ stuff, the call up Ian Happ stuff, the bring him up and start him every day.
To be fair, yeah. I do think that's a small minority of the Cubs fan base who are actually suggesting that.
Just no good. the notion that he's going to come up and save this group or just slot himself in and be a major league player is not so great. And I also think it's an interesting, and again, I think this is coming from a minority of people, but it's an interesting thought process that they have such a short amount of patience with guys like Russell and Baez, who are still in their early 20s, have not been major league players for very long, and they don't want to give them the time to adjust and fail and grow and get back up again and all that. But you want to bring up another guy to do it, right? So then what happens when Ian Happ struggles? You know what I mean? I think we've said this before, but last year everything just goes so well, like incredibly well. And I'm not saying that that's good luck, but just that really only for that brief period of time did things converge in a negative way all at once. And right now you're getting a lot of it all at once. And this team is comprised of a lot of young players, a lot of guys with, interesting swings or holes in their game that they need to work on and adjust. And sometimes it's all going to hit like a wave. You know what I mean? Where you're going to be seeing so many bad at bats or guys just not looking like their best selves all at once, and it's horribly frustrating. But that's just the group that they have. This is not the 2007 Cubs that's full of a bunch of 35-year-olds where basically exactly where they are in their career and whatnot. This is a lot of guys who we're just gonna have to ride it out with them. And
it's odd too, because you have a defending World Series champion team, but at the same time the team is still really young, and a lot of them do need that developmental time, especially guys like Contreras and Schwarber and Almora. Neither of those three guys have played a full year of Major League Baseball. It's crazy to actually think about it like that. So you gotta be patient with that. And like you're saying, if you bring up another guy to throw in this mix, if Ian Happ plays, someone's development is going to get hindered. It's just the nature of the game right now. And that actually may have been a contributing factor, the limited playing time, the hindrance of development for Jorge Soler, who was traded. So you don't want to do that. You want to give these guys every opportunity you can get. I think Madden sticking with Baez after he started off poorly in the beginning of last year ultimately changed Baez's career trajectory. I really genuinely believe that. If you remember, Corey, Baez was one of the league's worst hitters in May last year. It was either May or April. I forgot what it was. I think his WOBA was 243. And I'm thinking, what the hell are we going to do? We have Schwarber on the shelf for the year. Baez can't hit. Soler is unproven. You have a huge hole in left field if none of these guys can get it together. What happens? Baez gets it together, plays third base, you move Bryant to left field, and everything's fine. So just a cautionary tale, I guess, not to stray off too much. But the Cubs are going to St. Louis, and they have a night game tomorrow. Again, if you're listening to this on Thursday, They have a night game on Friday, the next day, a 7:15 start time, Chicago time. And then they have a day game the following day on Saturday at 3:05. And then on Mother's Day and Sunday, they close it off with a 1:15 start time. And then, Corey, do you have the matchups for those games?
Yes. So Friday will be the newly called up Eddie Butler, Brendan's new obsession.
Yes.
Versus Mike Leake, who we all know well.
He's been pitching well lately, too.
And good luck explaining that one. You want to know what Cardinal Devil Magic is?
Tommy Pham's also playing
right
well.
There. Yeah, it's like I think it's like in Space Jam when the Monstars.
The water.
No. Those aren't the Monstars. The evil guys when they
the Monstars. Don't you
the spirit. Well, the water is not the Monstar.
Well, I thought you were talking about the water, but continue.
It's like when they. I don't know what word you want to use, extract the skill from the NBA players. And it, you know, is, you can like, you know, that see it like a goo coming out of their body or something like that. Like that's what happens. I don't know exactly what happens, but something inhabits the body of Mike Leake and turns him into a top end of the rotation.
I'm just thinking of Charles Barkley apparently convulsing after his.
Yeah, it did. This is the opposite, though. It's like they're putting it into into the bad player and turning him. But anyway, then Saturday is John Lester and Michael Wacha, and Sunday is Jake Arrieta versus TBA. I'm not sure. Perhaps if we were more up on the Cardinals, we might know who that was. I hate the Cardinals and don't read about them, so I do not know. But according to the Cubs website, it is to be announced. Yeah. So,
and then the Cardinals have Fowler on the DL along with Is he back?
He certainly drove in some runs tonight. So.
Okay, so Dexter Fowler is back. But Steven Piscotty was just put on the DL a few days ago. So he will not be playing. I didn't realize Fowler came back. Wow, these last 2 weeks have gone by fast.
This is not the Cardinals related podcast, so we won't hold you. You know, we won't hold that against.
Yeah, lucky for you guys. But any general thoughts going into the series against Cardinals? They've been playing well. They're up on the Cubs. They've turned their season around from their poor start. What are your thoughts?
Clean it up.
Yeah.
Be better. Execute better. I don't give, those are the moments where it's hard not to swear. You know what I'm saying? I do not care that the Cardinals are in first. I do not care anything about that. All of that is a narrative. It's May. Doesn't matter, right? Yeah. Like, I don't care about any of that. I don't care about that they're playing better than the world champs or any nonsense like that. Cubs got to play better. They got to play cleaner baseball. Cubs get swept in this series for all I care, but they got to play good baseball in doing it. And that's really all I care about at this point. We'll be watching the starting staff like anything else. I think the Butler's start will be very fascinating and potentially very important for the rest of the season.
I'm looking forward to that. That may be the most interesting game for me the entire year up until this point.
Yeah, so definitely something to look at there. And we'll see the Cubs are announcing that Butler will be the starter on Friday, but have yet to make the corresponding move, for him. I would guess Felix Pena, but that'll probably depend on their feeling on the bullpen. The only other note that I had was I think I would like to see Candelario stick with this team.
I really think so. I think,
yeah,
if anything happens, like, okay, let's say Butler gets lit up on Friday, you send them back down and you bring up Sestrizny or you bring up Pena. Like, I think they can afford with all these rainouts and Flora taking the bulk of those bad innings and the lackey start. I think they can afford to have a guy short in the bullpen. So I think we'll see Candelario up the entire series.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I like what I'm seeing out of him, and my initial reaction was I'm a lot more intrigued by him sticking with the team than I am La Stella. I don't know. you know, I don't know how the management feels about that or the staff or, you know, where that would all shake out. But I think he, and admittedly, I have not seen a lot of him on video. I've read a lot about him. I've read, you know, from a lot of people that I trust about him.
Candelario?
Yeah. So, yeah. But I, you know, just get the impression that, Tommy La Stella is not a good fielder. He has, and you can watch him in the game today. I mean, he has the arm of like a 4-year-old. There was one play in this game. I don't remember. I think it was when him and Javi turned a double play. And I mean, I was laughing out loud because it might have been Arenado who was running, who they end up getting, but Lestella's throw over to first, you're just like, there's no way that this is a thing that can happen. Like, this is the slowest double play turn. You know, but Candelario was making some diving plays over there at third, bringing a little bit of energy to the team, obviously spelling Rizzo at first, which I think is not an insignificant note if he can do it well, because, you know, we don't really have someone just slotted in to do that. I know Wilson was playing there the other night as well, which was
and
really
Mickey.
Funny. Yeah, so, but yeah, no, just to say I'm glad he's up. I'm glad he's getting a chance to play and get some innings. And depending on how he continues to go, I certainly wouldn't have any problem with him sticking. I like what I've seen, and just from a general roster construction standpoint, I kind of like where he fits in.
No, I agree. I would like to see Candelario up for an extended period of time beyond the series. I have no issues sending La Stella back down if he's cool with it and giving some more at bats. I don't know if he'll be cool with it. But we'll see. I think we end off the podcast pretty much the same way these past few times with, calm down, give it time. The season's long, blah, 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 blah. But anything else you want to add before we sign off?
I don't think so. Like I said, and I think it ended up being similar to some of the stuff that Hayward said, but I think I've said it on here before, but before every one of those playoff games, I would mutter the same thing to myself. And that was that this is the better team on the field.
Yeah, I remember this.
They just need to execute, play their game, let their talent and their effort shine through, and that's all that you can ask of them. And I don't think that they've been doing that so far. But that's all I think, and that's kind of what I mean about, you know, I'm not even necessarily overly concerned with the results this weekend, but just execute the small stuff, you know, like Joe Maddon has always been saying, you know, do simple better, be executing the simple stuff, clean things up, and just play clean, solid baseball, and I think the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah. You can find the Cubs-related podcast on iTunes. You can subscribe to our podcast either on your iPhone or on your computer. If you search Cubs-related in the podcast iTunes store, we are the first one to come up. And if you feel so inclined to do so, leave us a comment or a review on iTunes. It would greatly help us. Other than that, we will talk to you guys after what we hope to be a Cardinals sweep.